Casey is in the newsroom. Good morning. How
good
are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you doing?
All right. How's engaged life? Is there a magazine for that, by the way? There's a magazine for just about
everything. There is.
Welcome to Ticking Clock.
I'm trying not to buy any magazines. I don't want to do that. I don't want to get involved. Right now, everybody's just...
They're bridal magazines.
There's tons of bridal magazines, and we're actually looking for some fun books on engagement. You know, how to act when you're engaged, what you should talk
things
about.
Things you should be talking about.
Yeah.
Did you solve the money issue? That was the first one we brought up.
We haven't talked about that yet.
It's on the table.
It's on the table. Yeah. We talked about it a month ago. We haven't followed up yet.
Okay.
Since, you know.
And do you now, did you get any sort of counseling, some compatibility counseling or anything, or are you just winging it, like, free form?
I was going to see how it goes.
Yeah.
Our problem is we're not religious. Everything that you're talking about has to do with religion. The books that are out there on engagement are all based on Christianity or Catholicism or...
It's just kind of a strange coincidence that all good comes from some sort of faith. Yeah. You want to stay away from that stuff as much as you can.
Isn't there anything from the Eastern tradition?
Well, those are religions, too, when you get down to it. I mean, you know, it's okay. By the way, it's okay to go in a la carte and have a little love and brotherhood, and you don't have to buy the religion Kool-Aid. And specifically speaking, especially if one of them does mention Kool-Aid as part of it.
Yeah, you want to run, don't walk from that religion.
So, I mean, Lisa and I, we're not that religious. We consider ourselves spiritual, but we went to the church. We did the whole thing. Are you being married by a person of faith?
Or
are you having a bungee jump wedding?
No. Just as people who are religious are only comfortable being married by religious people, I am as uncomfortable.
Oh, so you're not just not religious, you're anti-religious.
I don't like organized religion. Oh. I think everybody should believe whatever they want, but I have had such a bad experience with organized religion.
What was your bad experience? You've never really articulated.
Oh, yes, I have. My Jesus camp that I went to in fifth grade, where counselors stood up.
Michael Jackson wasn't running this, was he?
He was.
What happened at Jesus camp?
We sat in our little cabin with our counselor, and she gathered us around and wanted to tell us a story about how Jesus had saved her, so we got very excited.
There's no harm in those stories.
No, there's not, until she gets to the part about rape. And we're 10, and she said Jesus saved her from that.
Oh, you got a bad counselor.
Yeah, and
like
then
getting a bad hot dog.
Yeah. No,
bite into it, and say, you'll never have another hot dog.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, she started... one messed up individual.
No. Then we went to the larger camp meeting, and a different counselor from the male side stood up and talked about how...
Hi, kids, did you enjoy her rape story from earlier? I know y'all did. Everybody enjoyed that.
Okay, now wait a minute. What was her story again?
Her story was that she had been the victim of sexual assault, and that by accepting Jesus into her life, she was able to overcome it.
Well, that's nice. And how old were you?
10.
Why did you need to hear this?
I don't know.
Did you tell your parents?
I didn't until later, because I thought that I was going to hell, and I didn't want to go to hell because I hadn't accepted Jesus into my heart. And they told all of us, if you don't accept Jesus by the end of camp, you're all going to hell.
Oh, I got
by
that.
By the end of
I
camp?
I got that early on, too.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know, that's part of teaching you to take things with a grain of salt.
No, it's not.
This hell thing.
There's a parable in the Bible.
Just let it roll off your back, this hell thing.
Sure.
Okay, so boy, that soured you on the whole wedding thing. So you're going to get, who are you going to get? Some, like, disgraced mayor of D.C. or something?
I was hoping Spitzer was available, actually.
Yeah.
No, we just want to get married in Hawaii and get a non-denominational person to officiate and have family and friends. And
all right.
We don't want to do anything.
Are your parents religious? Did they ever apologize for Jesus camp?
No.
You just got a bad one, you know. I mean, so many good things have come out of that. Hell.
No. Not hell.
I mean, our entire next month is World Vision, and it's one of the most beautiful Christian organizations in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what I like about that is that
you maybe need some new experience.
I think I do.
I'm sure people will invite you.
Well, I don't know.
Take a gal to church. Wants.
I think I'm beyond help.
So, you haven't planned any of that yet.
It's getting overwhelming because everybody keeps asking me, and I don't even know where to start. And right now, everybody keeps asking about the engagement story, and they are appalled that I didn't cry, and I didn't realize I was supposed to cry.
You didn't cry?
No, I not at all. I was so excited, I started jumping up and down.
That's you, though.
Yeah, but I didn't even feel like crying. The thought of shedding a tear didn't even occur to me.
Well, maybe it was like the time difference or something. I mean, you were on a different continent. You're not expected to act the same. You're on vacation. It was a happy time.
Yeah. I don't know if people always cry. Do they always cry when they get engaged?
Every single one. In fact, I said to my friends, I said, you know, if I ever get proposed to, I know I'm not going to cry. And they said, oh, yes, you will. Even the icest cold people will cry when they're proposed to.
Did Jocelyn cry when you asked her to marry you?
Oh, as soon as she turned from her boss's door and saw me standing there, the tears started.
Really? She bawled.
She could barely answer. Remember, you had to ask, what did she say?
Yeah. I was on the phone. I couldn't see it, but you're right.
Yeah.
I think Kelly moistened. I don't think she full out cried, but I think there was a little moisture there, you know, just a glint of tear. It was a long time ago, though. It's hard to remember specifically.
Yeah, it's hard for me to remember anything. I think when I asked her, she said, you're kidding, right? That's what she said. I said, no, let's do it.
Let's do it. I love it.
And she never, just like today, she never actually said yes, now that I think about it. My wife never says yes. She just behaves as if. She started making wedding plans, all, but I never really got a...
Didn't get a solid.
You're not going to give me any satisfaction. So so you feel like you should... look, I'm one of those tough guys who never cries.
I cry all the time.
You do cry all the time.
Yeah. How could I not cry?
For that? Oh, I see. Okay, so... So you cry for important things.
Underarm deodorant commercials.
Things like that.
Crappy movies.
The end of a good movie.
Yeah,
Chuck
right.
Norris double feature. I'm a baller at that.
I think your engagement was anticlimactic.
Excuse me?
You guys had talked about it. You'd been ring shopping. Then you did the pretend to wait. It's like Santa Claus when you're nine.
Oh, boy, guess who was here last night? Fat man in the red suit showed up. Oh,
yes.
Thank goodness I've led a clean 9-year-old life.
You know what I mean? That's all it was. It's no big deal. It shouldn't be...
I don't know. I feel like he deserved to have me cry. You know, he's gone through all this trouble.
Oh, I think he knows in the future there'll be tears.
Yeah, there'll be lots of tears.
There'll be many wet moments.
Mike Jones.
Well, and could it maybe be part of the reason that Jocelyn burst into tears was she was so shocked that I was standing there and that I was actually proposing. And I kind of got the impression that, Casey, you weren't terribly shocked.
I wasn't shocked. I was surprised, but I wasn't shocked.
Had you had some input on that beautiful ring you're wearing?
I did, but it was so long ago.
Oh, see what I'm saying? It's hard to fake surprise. It was no surprise.
It was
the last thing I said to you before you left was, have a nice engagement.
Yeah, you're my guru that predicted it all.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. There'll be plenty of things to cry about. Trust me, you're getting married. Bruce Springsteen in concert this past weekend. I assume everything worked out okay. You guys got backstage. Did Mike Jones get backstage?
Nope.
Did you get backstage?
Nope.
Nobody got backstage? What about the lounge?
Nope. Lounge wasn't backstage.
Oh, but you got into that lounge then.
I did a lounge, yeah.
Was it called?
The E Street Lounge.
The E Street Lounge.
Very sweet of Nils. Don't get me wrong. To offer us those that hospitality. It was very nice of him.
Well, as you say, don't get me wrong, this must mean something.
No, not at all, not at all.
Mike Jones in?
No, I did.
No, you did stiff him like you said you were going to do on the air.
Yeah, well, you could just tell the story. Go ahead. You're not going to worry about what happened or anything. Just go ahead. You can tell it.
I'm just setting it up, dude.
Oh, yeah, you are. The sad thing is that I was told by Nils' manager that she couldn't do four as she had initially promised. There would only be two.
Right.
Then when I get there, there were four, which is, you know, it was really kind of sad because it did force me to choose between Mike and my brother.
Right.
When I thought I had two.
Forced you to choose between the guy who helped you get the tickets.
Yeah.
And your family.
Yeah.
And so, you shafted your coworker.
Oh. And as I will every time when it comes to family and coworkers, like, sure.
I know. So when there were four, you immediately said, oh, what's Mike's cell phone number?
And I did put a call into Mike. He could check his phone records.
Oh.
And I found out.
Did anybody from the band show up at the E Street Lounge?
I'll show you the picture.
Oh, cool.
It's out there. Little Steven.
Cool.
Made his way up to the E Street Lounge, part of the Little Steven Underground Garage.
Why are you
radio
all tense?
Because I get painted as a real piece of crap in moments like this in the show, and I'm immediately, you know, stiff the guy this, blah, blah, blah.
We all do. It's part of the fun.
I tend to be painted as a piece of crap when I am one.
That's you.
To somebody.
Sure, yeah. Because
you, it's always unfair.
We're level-handed. You tend to just rush like a bull through a china shop to what the point you want to make is, regardless
that's
of
the color. That's the color of my
kitchen, I'll sit back and let you rush. Go ahead.
I'm not rushing anywhere.
So what happened? So you stiffed Mike. We know that. We talked about it. We hashed that out last week.
Yeah, I made a very difficult choice, and Mike was very gracious and understood.
It's an easy choice, but go ahead.
Did you find somebody for those other two passes?
Jeff Kathan.
Great.
The drummer from Spike and the Impalers, who has played with Nils Lofgren. And Nils actually gave him a shout-out here on the air last week. Jeff was coming to the show, and I was able to let him know there was a pass for him if he'd like to go do the E Street Lounge. Problem is, the E Street Lounge wasn't backstage. It was a bar. It was the Sonics Championship Club or whatever. It's You know, midway.
They
up
use
the floor.
They use that for special private parties and things like that.
Yeah, and it's,
they do it for most concerts, by the way.
That's great.
They don't call it the E Street Lounge at every concert.
No, that wouldn't work at a Kenny G show.
G Street.
Thank you very much. We're here all week. Try the veal.
Now I'm embarrassed.
Yeah.
We both went far. Okay, ahead. So what happened? Okay.
It's a bar. It was a bar. I get to hang out with other people from our industry who I see all too often. And, you know, I'm not looking to drink anything, so I didn't have a chance to stand in the extremely long beer or wine line, where one bartender was not adequate enough to keep up with the demand.
Well, if they do it slow, it doesn't cost them that much for liquor.
They weren't giving it away. They were charging for it.
They were charging for you to stand in a spot that was special and maybe meet someone from the band.
Exactly. Yeah. And as we know, like Nils said, that Bruce is given homework every night, so Nils didn't get a chance to come up and say hello.
He's got to learn that new song that they're going to butcher the first one out.
Thanks very much. And little Steven did come up for a grip and grin. You know how that goes. Everybody lines up in a very long line, and you get 18 seconds with your hero. You get to pose for a picture, and then you're
shooting
away.
And so you did that?
I did that with little Steven. My brother Kevin and I posed for a very nice photo with little Steven. And I had hoped to be backstage. I had hoped to get a chance to maybe meet Bruce.
Oh, you had this fantasy.
I did.
Well, he had a letter. He had a manifesto prepared.
Yeah. What happened in your fantasy?
Tell
me the fantasy first. What you hoped would happen backstage.
It's so weird that you say this. In my fantasy, I had hoped that we'd be in... I've done meet and greets before. I've got a chance to meet other bands. I know the parameters of how it works. In my fantasy, Bruce came into the room, kind of milled around. I laid back and kind of didn't
want to appear
him.
Too aggressive at first.
Played hard to get, did you?
Well, in my fantasy, you know,
I wonder who that guy with the spike hair is over there.
He's interesting.
He's too cool to talk to me, though. No, that's cool. He's not being an obsessive fan. That's
in
nice.
In my fantasy, I am calm, cool, and collected, and when I do get a chance to shake Bruce's hand, I let him know exactly how much his music has meant to me.
All right. And he's never heard that before. Work. How did you put it?
I don't know if he's heard that
before. Oh, yeah. I thought you said he had a manifesto.
Let me get to that.
Okay.
Mr. Bull in a China Shop. So, you know, I asked Friday on the air, when you gave me the last hour of Friday's show, I asked people if they had met their idols. How'd it go? What advice do you have? What are the downsides? Was everything you wanted it to be? A lot of people said, you know, take it easy, treat them like real people, blah, 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 blah. I mentioned that I wanted to write a letter to give to Bruce because I knew I would fumble on the words. My mouth would go dry. You know how I get. And I would just hand Bruce this letter. Saying,
were you going to type this on a broken typewriter in a cabin in Montana?
I made the same joke Friday. Aren't you clever?
Well, handing them stuff in general, I think, is bad
policy. This stuff is pretty easy to see, yes.
So Bruce didn't, of course, come up to the E Street Lounge. Only little Steven did, and he did out of contract.
Did you ask him to give the letter to Bruce?
I shook little Steven's hand. We thanked him.
Oh, this had to go badly.
And I said, hey, and I tried to hand him the letter for Bruce. At which Bruce, what's this? I said, that's just a little note. I was hoping you'd go, I can't take that. Like it was full of anthrax or Racine or some kind of, you know.
Right.
Or some, you know, some copywritten song I was going to accuse Bruce of stealing from me or something like that. And in hindsight, I understand why he couldn't.
So you had prepared this letter to Bruce.
Yes, I had.
Which you were hoping to hand to Bruce, and little Stevie says, which is a diss. I mean, it's tough. It's tough for you. He looks at you and goes, I'm sorry, super fan, but I can't deliver your letter to Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
Ouch. That hurts.
I was, okay, I understand. I didn't try to say, hey, it's just a thing.
I feel
bad
for you, by the way. I'm not heartless.
I appreciate that. I know.
Yeah.
Someone had called in Friday with all their people of advice, and the last guy we spoke with said, look, I hope you don't meet him, because it'll never live up to your expectations. You won't have anything to look forward to in the future. And in hindsight, I guess I'm kind of glad that I didn't. Because, you know, it wouldn't have. I wouldn't have been able to tell him all the things I wanted to tell him. I wouldn't have been able to convey how much it's all meant to me for the 30 years I've been going to these shows. I couldn't have done it any justice.
He knows, though. You know how he knows?
I don't... Hell.
He's like Santa Claus.
Because he's stinking rich. That's how he knows.
It's okay. Yeah. Okay.
So do you That's still, how you know you have huge fans, because you have mansions and...
You have the letter still?
I forgot to bring it today.
And you can have people that you instruct to keep those people away from you. That's how you know.
How long was the letter?
It was two paragraphs, very short.
Oh, can I read it?
I didn't bring it. I forgot. I'm sorely sad that I forgot to bring it. I wanted to read it to you. I thought it was very tastefully written.
Now, why don't you just mail it to the record label?
That's what I'll do. Okay, you know, given the lack of resources to put it in his hand.
All these years, you've never been able to meet Bruce Springsteen.
No, I haven't. And they tried. I know Carrie told me that he tried making some phone calls, and Crow told me that he tried making some phone calls, and Jeff Cathan even tried to go through Nils and make some phone calls, and that's...
Well, the show started...
I appreciate that.
It started an hour late. I imagine Bruce was probably at an airport about the time you were trying to meet him. He probably wasn't even in town.
Here's the thing.
Bruce was doing sound check at 6:15. I heard him singing through the doors. He was there. I'm not...
Yeah. But when you're that famous... And I can only guess what this is like. I only have we have a tiny brush with fame. But when you're that famous, everybody wants a piece of you wherever you go. And when you're his age, how old is he now?
57.
Yeah.
Is he really?
Yeah.
When you're his age, it's like you've basically done so many grip and grins that you've basically said, "Hey, dude, I'm just doing the show. I need and you need your peace and quiet so you can be meditated and ready to go out there. You need to do your little chakra or whatever your chants are, your meditation, your yoga." And you know, it's wonderful that all of these fans love you, but you don't have time for it. Do you understand it from his point of view?
I completely do.
Okay.
And I'm not bitter. Hope I don't sound bitter.
But it must have really hurt for little Steve. I've had the moments
it
like
did.
That myself, you know.
Now, it did hurt when little Steven told me he couldn't do it, because that was my only chance.
Did little Steven tell you that he was there only under contractual obligation, too? That would hurt a little.
He didn't. No, he didn't. Okay.
But wait a minute. How come you didn't... you're a car salesman. How come you took no for an answer? Did you take no right away?
I did. I was trying to be respectful of little Steven's time.
What about the Spike? I know that. Don't you know who I am?
At all costs. Well, that really flies.
If you watch The Sopranos enough, you know that, you know, when little Steven says no, probably you take that.
For an answer.
Yeah.
Dude, I do a radio show in town here, and I talk about Bruce all the time. And I've talked about it on the show, how I'm going to try and deliver this two paragraphs to him. I'm not some wacko. I would have pitched it.
Well,
that's your first clue.
What's the first thing a wacko says?
I'm not some wacko.
I'm not some wacko.
But you're a big radio guy in town. I mean, I would have actually gone for it.
There were a line of people behind me waiting to meet little Steven.
Oh.
I didn't want to try to, you know,
so you would have been, well, you're normal, then I'll take it. And then the next guy goes, well, I am.
I have written a song about how much I would love to follow Bruce's children.
I was trying to be respectful.
Did the outside of the envelope look unusual? Did you draw any little flowers?
No, it said Bruce. It said Bruce on it.
Will you read it tomorrow around this time?
I'd love to.
All right. I'm sure it's very tasteful and thoughtful.
I thought it was. Yeah. I gave it to Melissa. I said, is this bordering on stalkerhood, or is this okay? She said, no, it's pretty tasteful.
Although, stalkerhood is a little like alcoholism. If you have to ask, you probably
have
it.
You already have a problem. Yeah, I know.
This morning, we're joined by Washington State's second-in-command. Brad Owen has served as Washington's lieutenant governor since 1996. That's 12 years. He's the nation's longest-serving lieutenant governor. Later this week, Brad will be adding another prestigious title to his resume. The nation of Spain is honoring Brad by bestowing him with knighthood as recognition and appreciation for Brad's work with Spain on a variety of economic and cultural exchange projects. Lieutenant Governor Brad Owen, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. Hello.
Thank you. Glad to be on.
So you're a heartbeat or away from the governor, right? I mean, you're the guy.
Heartbeat or scandal, however.
Wait a minute. I'm the radio show host. I'm supposed to go for the gutter.
Not this governor. Yeah. Let's make that clear.
Yeah. Well, I was saving the question for later. But when that happened to Elliot Spitzer, every lieutenant governor in the country must have gone, ooh. So every once in a while, one of us gets to be governor.
Yeah, actually, I think most of them went, see, I told you so, it can happen.
It can. It doesn't happen that often, does it?
No, but, you know, since I've been in office, there's been a number around, because there's a number of different reasons. There have been governors who have died in office. There's governors who have been appointed by presidents. There's governors who have resigned. I mean, so, you know, there's a number of reasons that a person would move in, and then you also have the situation when the governor leaves the state, you're on call, and the governor doesn't have to worry about whether or not things are taken care of, you know.
So are you, do you have aspirations to be governor, or are you happy being number two?
My wife says never say no, you know, but at this point I don't, but I'm not going to be, you know, I'm a politician, you know, and those things are always in the back of your mind. Well, what would that be like? Should I think about that? The governor's not going to run again. At this time, I'm going to run for re-election for this office, and you know, it's possible I could retire after this term.
Now, are you a pretty bipartisan guy to be doing it for so long through many different administrations?
Yeah, that's something I've prided myself in, and being pretty fair and pretty work with both parties. And I preside over the Senate, and I think that's where you can find the best indication, is because I preside over the Senate. Doesn't matter if the Republicans are in control or the Democrats, which I've presided over both when both have been, you know, either one has been in control. And I believe that the test is to go to those folks and ask them, and I believe that you're going to find that they're going to say that I'm very fair and impartial.
Wow. That just doesn't make for good press. No good copy.
Yeah.
If I were to go to your closet and rummage around, what would be the most embarrassing thing I would find? A really ugly pair of bowling shoes? What might it be?
Oh, I don't know. I think probably, you know, there's nothing really dramatic there. I think you probably, some of my I don't know what you call them, but pants that I wear around the house when nobody's around.
Some,
you know,
some very odd pants, maybe some unusual ointments, some embarrassing ointments.
No ointments, but things like with the Three Stooges on them, or, you know.
He won't go on record with the ointments.
Yeah, Three Stooges, you know, boxers, though. That was sweet of you to admit.
Yeah. All right, now let's talk about Spain. You're being honored by Spain, which is very cool, knighthood. You know, your wife says, never say no, you might be governor someday. Hey, honey, I'm home, and I'm a knight. What is that like?
Well, you know, it's here's what it's really like. It's, you know, she gets the title as Doña. So now when I get home, she says, "Okay, that's really nice. Take the garbage out." And instead of saying "Yes, dear," I say "Yes, Doña."
Yes, Doña. I take the garbage out now.
Yeah.
And you hop on your mighty steed and you spear the garbage can.
That's right.
And the plaque on your desk that says Lieutenant Governor Brad Owen. Are you going to change that to Sir Brad?
No. I think I'll just leave it the way it is.
Do you become a sir, though, as a knight? You
No, it's actually, no, actually the term is Don.
Don.
Don. It's not, it's not, well, I thought it was Sir Paul McCartney, or is that
a British
knight?
British knight.
So it's Don Brad. Is it Don Brad or Don?
Well, I guess you know, in Spain they go by the first name normally, so
okay. It
is Brad, but I think it sounds better with Bradley. But I've never told anybody to use the term Bradley, but it just kind of flows better, I think, you know.
Don Bradley.
Yeah.
Now, Bradley, how did you get this? I mean, did you earn it? What did you actually do that made Spain say, "Hey, this is a nice guy. We got to make him."
Well,
right.
I've been working with you know, we do a lot of international work in my office, but it actually started back when I was in the Senate. I was chair of transportation when I first met the honorary consul of Spain, and we were working on with them on an incredible train cars for the runs here in Washington State and going beyond, and we purchased some of those, and that relationship continued on as lieutenant governor, and I've done work with them on bringing Cervantes Institute to the state of Washington, which I won't go into a lot of detail on this, but the King's Art and with the Seattle Art Museum, and I worked on
cultural stuff.
Pardon me?
Cultural stuff.
Oh, well, cultural stuff, educational stuff, trade stuff, as well as you know, the first, you know, we are the most trade-dependent state in the nation. The first traders in the state of Washington, before we were actually a state, was in the 1700s, and it was the Spanish with our coastal tribes, the Macaws and the Quileutes and the Quinaults and the ones that are in Canada, which are all related to ours as well. And so we've done a memorial for a monument to those first traders that we are going to dedicate probably in May as well. So throughout, and as well as I studied Spanish and spoken in Spain at the University of Salamanca and things. So anyway, there's just a number of things that I've done with them that they felt he felt worthy of making the request to the King of Spain, and the King of Spain gave the order to provide this this incredible honor.
Right. And now, when is this happening?
The ceremony is Wednesday.
This Wednesday, are you flying to Spain, or are they coming?
No, it's going to be here.
Oh, they're coming.
It's
here.
Over the internet.
There's
a webcam.
The king's not coming here. We've had the king here, the king and queen, and we've lunched with the king and queen, but they're not coming to.
That's got to be fun, lunching with a king.
Yeah, it was interesting. They're actually very nice people, you know.
You don't take them to taco time, obviously. Where do you lunch with the king?
No, Taco Bell.
Taco Bell, yeah.
No, we don't do. I think I can't actually tell you the truth. I can't remember. I think it was at the Seattle Art Museum. I think that we did it. I'm not. Nice. I can't remember exactly.
And was your wife with it? You're Dawn, and what's she again?
Danya.
Dawn and Danya.
She was there as well. Yes.
Yeah.
This was when we brought this. We brought this just phenomenal. It wasn't only art. It was also some cultural things. We brought actually artifacts back that they traded back in the 1700s. That is now part of the king's property that were on display as well.
That the art museum. Okay.
Some just incredible things besides some amazing art and some armor and some different things like that. But we brought the stuff together to show this long time running relationship with this incredible nation. I mean, it's just a beautiful place in Spain. If you ever get a chance to visit. And by the way, this award, I know people like to do the Don and Danya thing, but in fact, it's not actually a rank of nobility in my case. It's a rank of honor, you know, from the king and the country.
It doesn't allow you to ride around and chop off heads or do any of the cool stuff that knights used to be able to do.
I'm kind of afraid people are going to see me more.
A sudden
Don,
personality change for you because you're kind of like a pretty easygoing guy.
But is there kneeling and, you know, like sword christening and stuff?
No. He'll just be placing a award around my neck, I think.
Hey, Brad, what kind of honors and privileges come with the office of Lieutenant Governor of Washington? Are you allowed to, you know, sit in the front seat on the monorail anytime you want to, bounce a tourist family to another car?
Well, you know what it usually does is when I go to things, they take me to the front of the line in the buffets. But I always resist that because I think I just lose votes from everybody that's behind me. So
that's it. So now if I have to ask this because just out of curiosity, you know, think something could happen. God forbid, hope it doesn't, but. If anything happened and you suddenly, like this fella in New York, suddenly became governor,
mm-hmm.
What radical changes would you make to our state?
What radical changes?
You notice how it's a very gentle question. It's just
I would come up with a classic rock song to make to be the new state song.
New state
really?
Song, Baba O'Reilly. I like it. What else?
Okay, let's see. What else would I do?
The can't get me in trouble because people will know I'm kidding.
Yeah. No, I don't know.
You finally going to go back and get Vancouver Island for us?
Yeah, no, you know, I think I'm going to kind of avoid that because war is not real popular right now.
No, it's the wrong time for war.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good time for health care, though.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good luck to you, and congratulations on knighthood.
Well, thank you very much.
Brad Owen in Shelton, a heartbeat away from our governor. He's our longest-serving lieutenant governor in the history of the whole United States. Is that right?
Currently, right now, you bet.
Been there since 1996. Congratulations, Brad.
Thank you.
All right. All right. You know his wife wants him to be governor.
Yeah, you're second lady. That can't sound good to anybody.
Also, why don't they... You know what? Hey, Mike, I had a Star Trek question for him, but I didn't go there. If you got governor, why don't you call the second guy number one, like they do on Star Trek?
Right.
Why do they call him number two? Nobody should be called number two. It's demeaning.
Well, it's lieutenant. Why not captain or higher on the list?
In our show, I think Joe would be number two, and I think he'd be okay with that. Don't you think?
Yeah, you're number one.
Cool.
You're number two.
I like number two.
Which explains those long absences during the commercials. We have a little bit of a moral dilemma, maybe, with Mike Jones, and I don't know if this is a good time or bad time to bring it up. Or maybe it's already been solved. It was left over from Friday, but Mike says he got something in the email that was inappropriate. And I don't know what you're supposed to do when that happens. Usually I just forward it to all of my friends and say, hey, this is funny.
check this guy out.
I don't know if you can do that on the company email.
Could you take me off that list, by the way?
I know, sorry. Technically, you can't, right? I mean, technically, you're
supposed
to.
It's an actionable offense, technically.
It is.
Yeah.
And Mike says, although this wasn't that, it wasn't humor. Or maybe it was. Was it humor?
No. Okay. Not funny.
Because it came from another radio producer. Mike says he got what may have been a very inappropriate email.
Ooh.
How many radio producers for different shows do we network with?
Probably half a dozen or so.
Personal friends or just people like pen pals you've met at conventions and stuff?
Mostly the latter, I would say.
Right.
Hey, we like you guys, Twisted Tunes.
And then they send us stuff.
Well, it's nice that these guys share resources. We have something that a guest that was great for us, and Michael passed that along to other shows.
Yeah.
So that the guest can get his message out, or they can, you know, help their audience.
So, what about this was inappropriate? Were they coming on to you?
No. Although she's a cutie, and I'm a little nervous because, you know, in this day and age, she could be listening, you know.
Ooh, of course, on the internet. It's a hot producer from which market?
Oh, you really want me to nail it down now, huh?
Well, do I know who she is?
Maybe. Well, given your memory, probably.
No, I probably wouldn't remember.
Yeah, she works in that room right there, and you have no idea who she is.
Some sort of, yeah.
She's a cutie, huh, Mike?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Vancouver.
Lots of shows hire airheaded, good-looking producers. We hired a bald-headed guy.
Good-looking.
Smart guy who's nothing but trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What market?
Vancouver, BC.
Oh.
Great. This will get right back to her, and then she'll, on her show, talk about the inappropriate email that she got from listeners about me.
What did she send to you?
Well, first, she asked me how our Backstage Pass program operates. How do we do that? Because they want to do something like that.
Oh, do they?
Up there, yeah. That's a great idea.
That's one of the, by the way, that's one of the things that we started doing almost 20 years ago that most shows would never dream of allowing people to see them on a regular basis. They, like, hide some of them. And I don't know why. Maybe we get nervous if people are watching. Or, you know, a lot of shows don't like to be... They don't want you to know what goes on behind the scenes.
Some shows won't even put pictures of themselves out on their website.
Right. Isn't T-Man a guy who never puts his picture out?
Yeah, I think
Rob Tepper.
He does a blue dot.
Yeah. Well, he's ugly.
So. Have you ever seen him? Is he ugly?
I have. I've met him. He's a normal-looking guy.
He's not. He's hideous.
He's normal-looking.
He's hideous. Let's
I was at a ball game with a guy one time, and a peanut man kept trying to hit him in the face.
Yeah.
It's awful.
It was just his brand. He decided to be that way, which is fine. So this very hot producer from a Vancouver radio station, female producer, right, who you tryst with at conventions.
Right.
Wow. This is how it escalates right here, Peter.
You know, the cocktail party, we get together and exchange notes.
It's
sure.
All purely very professional, if
Absolutely.
Jocelyn's listening.
Absolutely.
You're not client number 9 or anything like that, but God's sakes, no, he's fine.
No.
But she sends you an email and you go, inappropriate.
Well, at first, the Backstage Pass thing, that's no problem. So I sent her this long, really detailed email about how we do that, you know, what we ask of our listeners and how we handle the whole thing. And, oh, okay, great. So she sends me back a reply and says, a totally off-topic question. Because I had said, you know, have any more questions about anything at all we do, just ask. So she sends back this reply and says, totally off-topic question. And maybe this is a little inappropriate, and I know it's really personal, but... How much do you make? I was like, wow, she would have loved it if I'd just given her a number. Like, here you go. This is
Oh, sure. Here in the States, we pay our producers
$100,000.
You know, the week.
But I'm thinking of walking out.
The week dollar and all. Yeah. You know.
You should have actually just lied.
That's what I hate, because you can't ever trust asking somebody that. You never should, first off.
Is it inappropriate to ask someone how much they make always?
Yes.
Why?
Because it puts somebody on the spot if they're not comfortable sharing that information. It's kind of personal, because what if somebody's embarrassed about how much they make?
Some professions, they don't mind at all. Some people like to boast about how much they make.
Yeah.
For some, it's public record.
Yeah, it's true.
Ball player signs a contract, it's in the newspaper how much they make.
So why do you think, did you ask her why she was asking? Why do you want to know?
Well, she told me why. Because she, I don't want to get her in trouble with her bosses, but at the time, she wants a raise.
Oh.
And she wanted to know, if she doesn't think she's being paid enough, she wanted to know what would be inappropriate.
Did you just reply, well, of course, you're a good-looking woman. Of course they're not going to pay you as much as a guy like me.
No, but I can do that right now. It's never too late.
Two words, glass ceiling.
I'm just saying, if she sends you an inappropriate email, I think you owe her one back.
Fair game. Yeah. With pictures.
Yeah. An eye for an eye.
Well, you just ask her, how much do you make? You show me mine, I'll show you yours. I mean, you...
That's really appropriate, too. So,
yeah, you sort of got that right.
Do you have any idea what a Canadian producer makes?
No, I don't. But if it's anything like a beginning producer in the U.S. makes, it's probably not very much money.
Well, Mike, it's
not. Oh, she's beginning.
I get that impression. She's pretty young.
You can't base what your worth is in this business. It's so bizarre. I mean, everything comes into play. Mike's experience. This girl's got how much experience? Mike, a couple years, if she's lucky?
Yeah, I'm not that familiar with the rest of it. That's the impression I get.
You can't go by what Mike has earned throughout the course of his career as opposed to what a guy across the street makes because he's in a new show that doesn't have any track record whatsoever. It's apples and oranges.
Is it a new show that doesn't have any track records whatsoever while we're making friends across the border?
Not that new. They've been on the air for a few years.
They have. Okay. And they're doing pretty good?
I think so.
You know, you can always tell her what I say.
What's that?
It's very boring. It's very supply and demand, and it's also very have the guts to stick yourself out there. If you don't like what you're making, you can try. First, this goes for anybody who wants a raise. And my sons come to me. My friends come to people come to me all the time because there's an old expression in one of these. Heck, you can read it in any airport or airline magazine from this guy who does negotiating seminars. You don't get what you deserve. You get what you negotiate. Have you ever heard that phrase?
Of course. From you.
Yeah, I didn't invent it. Who's the guy who invented that? Is it Anthony Karas or somebody who does a negotiating seminar?
I wish I could tell you.
Spent too much time in planes reading the actual dumb magazines that the airlines put in there. But you want a negotiating tip? After this brief pause from our sponsors, I will tell anybody out there, including her. I assume you're going to send her an MP3.
No.
You don't want her to know we were
not
talking about
her. Not once you called her cute, you can't. That's harassment.
I wanted to disable the stream.
It's not harassment. Come on, Casey. It's not harassment to call someone cute and say they're hot, is it?
Well, if you don't know them very well, yeah.
If it made her uncomfortable at all, it's harassment.
Unfortunately, anything constitutes as harassment. You could say anything you want to me, and I wouldn't be harassed because I say it right back. But there are some women who you can't say anything to.
That's a whole separate phone topic. Yeah. Are there women out there who would be upset if I said, hey, you're very attractive?
There are. They won't call in, but...
They won't call in?
No.
Why not?
They're offended that you just said it on the radio. They won't call in.
Well, I can't see them, so I lied.
Which is in itself harassing.
Right. That's a whole other... if someone wants to comment on that, actually, is there anybody out there that would like some help asking for a raise... I'll even give you personal advice for your situation. I can't promise anything. That's capitalism. Right. You might get your ass canned.
Right.
In fact, that's capitalism. But I will give you my best. This is advice, at your own risk, is worth whatever you are paying me for it.
And I will say, as far as somebody asking you what you make, I think there's only two people in the world that you need to disclose that to. Really.
Your wife?
No, not your wife.
And Uncle Sam.
Oh, yeah, your tax guy, number one.
No.
What do you mean your wife knows how much you make?
She does, but that's not an essential person to disclose it to. The two essential people are your tax guy and your mortgage guy. They both got to know what you make. Anybody else in the world,
None of your damn business. So when it asks for income on various forms for credit and stuff, you don't fill it out.
I hate that when they're doing that just for demographic reasons. Although I got to admit, I like it more than when I made less, because now I can check a box and go, yeah, I make more. But
no, that's a month.
Right. Is there anybody out there who wants a raise? 1-800-252-1025. You tell us your situation, and I will give you my best shot. It may or may not be helpful, but I'm offering it, and the price, free. 1-800-252-1025. And I'll start with this producer from this androgynous, can't tell one way or the other whether she's good-looking or not, gal from Vancouver.
She's good-looking.
This humanoid.
She's good-looking.
This humanoid
this
female.
Pulse. This meat
with a
puppet.
With a pulse. We'll start with her right after these. 1-800-252-1025. Want a raise? Here's how to get it.
Working for a living, working. Working for a living, working. Working for a living, living, working. I'm taking what they're giving because I'm working for
them. Are you taking what they're giving? Do you think that, first off, do you think you deserve a raise? And do you think that if you just knew how to ask, you might be able to get it? It's one of the hardest things to do. Joe predicted that we wouldn't have many calls, and you were right.
It takes a lot of courage to even ask you about asking for a raise, much less a boss.
We have three people, and one of them, the cell phone, just dropped out. Yes, Mike?
Yeah, or maybe they got cold feet. There was a little trepidation on the phone line.
So there's open lines if you're nervous about it. You can actually get through. Tell us your situation, why you think you deserve a raise. This is a practice run.
Free career counseling.
Yeah.
You can't ask here. How are you going to ask at work?
The catalyst for this is an email Mike Jones got from Spike's looking at her picture online, a producer from a morning show. We're not going to mention the name.
No.
The name of the show.
She's
good looking, but all Canadian women are good looking.
Right.
Well, yeah.
And I never mentioned that. But anyway, she said, how much do you make? Now, presumably that means she was going to go into her boss and say, stateside, where their economy is in the tanker, the producer for the Seattle station makes X amount. I need to make more. Is that maybe what she was going to do, right?
Maybe. Or she was maybe looking for, you know, a range. And I gave her a range in saying that, well, when I started, I wasn't making very much money at all. But, you know, I stuck
over
with
time.
Over
yeah.
time, yeah.
I've given several decades to the man.
There's nothing wrong with doing a salary survey on your industry, but it needs to be more anonymous.
All right. 1-800-252-1025. More brave people coming. Here's Alicia, your first. Hi, Alicia.
Of your show.
Well, I'm sorry, say that again because it was cut off.
Oh, I absolutely love your show.
Thank you.
All of you, absolutely hilarious. And I am so glad you're talking about this because on Thursday, I quite embarrassed myself. I was very nervous and my voice was fluttering and I approached my boss and I told him I was making just about enough money to actually make it to work and that's it. And that's how I tried to ask for a raise. And he was barely receptive, and it was kind of the wrong time anyway, so he didn't have a chance to really speak with me. So I really want to approach him again and say, I worked really hard for you. I know that I'm experienced in what I'm doing, but I really think that I deserve a raise, and
right.
I don't know what to do, and I'm scared.
Well, fortunately for all of you, I was on an airplane this weekend, so I read all about negotiating, because they have them in those little magazines. You did nothing wrong, okay? You pointed out that you're making about as much as, you know, barely enough to survive. You're a slave to his company, and that you have actual hardship in your life. Do you actually, really?
I actually live across the water, and I have to commute every day to come to work.
All right.
So between ferries and gas, my paycheck just covers that.
All right. So in other words, you've got subsistence living, working at this place. You like the job.
I love my job. I love it.
Companies that tell you how to ask for a raise charge you for this information. I'm going to give it to you for free.
Wonderful.
Did you talk to your boss? No problem. Again, there is no money-back guarantee. Did you talk to your boss? Did you ask him how he values you as an employee? Did you say, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? Am I doing a good job? Am I a good employee? Did you do that?
No, I did not.
It's the first thing you got to do is...
That means that I should, huh?
What, pardon me?
I guess that means that I should.
Well, in any situation, you want to remind him just who he's talking to and just how important and valuable you are to him.
Well, no, you want him to remind himself. In other words, so what you do is, again, to work, to have things happen good with people, sort of in some way has to be their idea. So you say, you start by, you know, finding an appropriate time, not when he's really busy.
Do you schedule that time? Do you say, can I take you out to lunch? Or,
you know, it really depends on the job. Mm-hmm. Some jobs, you know, the guy's putting the fries in and he's the manager and you can't really...
Ah, my hands!
but judging on your own particular situation, you try to find some time with him. You get him alone in his little room to sit down and say, I need to talk with you about something. And you open up the conversation with, I want to ask you, how am I doing? Because for you to ask for a raise for yourself, I'm going to presume you think you're doing great.
Correct.
And you think you deserve it.
Yes, I do.
But that's worthless. That means nothing.
Oh, no. Wait a minute.
Let me finish.
Okay.
It means nothing what you think. Trust me, I've been telling you that for so long.
I know, but I still don't buy it.
It means nothing. It only means, what means something is what he thinks. So by asking him the question, you open the door for him to share. And when he shares what he thinks with you, he's making a commitment to you right there that doesn't involve money. But it's the first step towards money. You see what I'm saying?
I do.
All right.
If I may make one slight counterpoint.
Yes, you may.
It does matter what you think. Because if you don't think you're worth the raise, you're not going to ever get one. It may not sway what he says or thinks or does, but if you in your heart don't believe you're worth more money, don't even bother going in. Confidence level.
I disagree again, because most people who ask for a raise have no confidence, and those are the ones I'm trying to help.
That's what I'm saying. Get you confidence.
Way you'll get the confidence is by asking him what he thinks of how you're doing.
How long have you been at the job?
I have been, this particular job, I've been here for 5 months, but I worked with another company that he partners with for a year before that, so I've known him.
Are there other people who do what you do and make more?
I actually made the faux pas that you were talking about before, and I asked the other fellow that I work with. It's just he and I, and we're the only two that do this particular job.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him how much he made, and I was probably lucky that we had somebody come in with kind of a little bit of an emergency, and that conversation never got continued. But
he didn't want to tell you. Yeah, people don't want to tell you how much they make.
Yeah, that's
all right. So do me a favor. Will you call us back, Alicia?
Yes, I will.
All right, here's what I want you to do. Schedule some time with your boss, not an appropriate time, unless that's worked for you in the past. And it's your choice. It's your life. But I recommend not. And schedule some time with him and just say, hey, could you tell me how I'm doing? Give me an evaluation of my performance. Is there any way I can make it better? How am I doing? And then, you know, get back, because he's going to know now, because you've already told him that you can barely survive. And then, you know, you got to nut up, too, even though you're a gal. You got to basically, you know, lay your cards down and say, you know, should I be looking for something else if I need to improve my lifestyle, or is there a chance for me to advance here? You're asking him to basically level with you on an equal level about what his plans are for you and what he thinks of what you're doing. How's that?
That sounds great.
Sounds good. Good luck. Yeah, might
good luck
not work.
With that, man.
Thank you. If you just tuned in and you have a difficult time asking for a raise, 1-800-252-1025. Give me your situation. We'll see. Lisa, hello.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi, Lisa.
Good morning.
All right.
I want a raise. For the work that I do and the people in my field, I think we are one of the most underpaid professions in this country, and that is caregivers for the elderly.
You're a caregiver for people who can't afford to pay. That's a problem, isn't it?
Well, these where I work, it's private pay. They pay about $4,000 a month to stay in the facility, so the company is making good money. But it's just not a, you know, excuse me, it's not a, any of the profits. It's not really shared with the employees, so to speak.
I had a sister who did this, and also she didn't make that much money.
Right, and I had to threaten to quit about 4 months ago to get a $3 an hour raise.
And it worked.
Well, yeah, they didn't want to lose me, but it's still way below what I feel that the job deserves to be paid. We do so much more in an adult family home facility than a regular. For instance, at a hospital, only RN registered nurses are allowed to give out medications. We do medications. We do. We're the eyes and ears for the doctor to report vital signs we take on the patients.
Are you you're a caregiver, right?
I'm a CNA.
Yeah. So I put caregivers like nurses, health practitioners. Even teachers, to me, are caregivers because
absolutely.
They work with kids. These are not, you know, they're profitable businesses in the sense, the caregiving business is profitable in the sense that the doctors and people at the top who own them they go into business to make a profit because
right.
they're in the business to make a profit. And the way that works is they need to keep expenses low.
Right.
And you, unfortunately, while to Mr. Farnsworthy...
Mr. Greenblatt.
You are more than you're more than an expense to him.
I think I love you.
you are like the only, you're the brightest light in his life.
Sponge birthday!
Gets up singing and whistling.
Right.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, to the people you work for, because they're in a profit business, it's sadly, but they're, you're an expense.
Right.
And did you say you just got a $3 an hour raise 3 months ago?
It was about 4 months ago.
So you expect a dollar an hour increase every month is what that boss is going to say when you go in there and ask for more. It hasn't even been a whole quarter yet.
Well, I think, too, what had happened is they basically, you know, when I told them I was quitting, that I had another job, I really didn't. I was just kind of bluffing. But they said, well...
Thanks for calling the radio station. hold on. We'll have your answer, and we have a few others too. We'll help you get a raise right after these. I don't know if this song is exactly what I want to come back for Lisa. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. Just generally speaking, you work hard for the money?
I do.
Good. Now, here's a tough question. You have to answer this. One of the neat things about asking for a raise, you have to actually be honest. Not just
okay.
with your boss, but with yourself.
Sure.
And you have to trick your boss into being honest with you. And that's the part what I said was tricking him. Because by going to him nonchalantly and saying, how am I doing? He's essentially endorsing you, right?
Correct.
Does your boss love you?
I'm very well liked, yes.
Are you, and this is the hard one, easily replaceable?
Well, for what I do, there are many people that can do that type of work. It's not that difficult to be a CNA, but for what I do, I am a house manager. I have a lot more responsibilities than other employees that we have, so I would say it would be hard to replace me.
It would, because someone would come in and they wouldn't know what they were doing.
Well, and they would be able to do it, but I do a very, very good job. I very seldom make mistakes. I do everything pretty much to the book.
And you're modest, too. I notice the extreme humbleness.
You can't be modest when you ask for a raise.
Would you say your boss could replace you and not really mind the drop-off in quality?
Not really, because it's...
She's not in radio. Make
it's because if you do not do that job right, your residents could suffer. If you're screwing up the medications, you're not ordering.
Okay, next question. I got it. You're great. Next question. Does your boss care?
What do you mean care? In what way?
For example,
if they hire a lesser employee and the care goes down a little bit and somebody may actually pass away, does your boss see it as an immediate opening and more space available to new tenants?
Oh, no, no. My boss, they're very, very devoted to their residents.
Okay, so they care. They're caring.
Oh, yes, definitely.
People who love the quality of service that you provide.
Yes.
And you'd be difficult to replace because someone would come in and not really know what they were doing. And so your boss would know that the quality would suffer.
Yes, I would think so.
All right. So there's, but you sound a little bit high maintenance, too, because of your...
Why, because she's female?
No, that's you.
Because she just got a raise 3 months
ago. She just
got
a raise
Every time you talk about women, you say, you're so high maintenance.
Well, Lisa,
I did not to the last one. She was very low maintenance.
Right,
and the raise you got 3 months ago, $3 an hour, percentage-wise, was that 10% of your salary, 15%? How big a raise was that?
That was probably 10%, maybe.
So you just got a 10% raise in a shrinking economy that's in a recession.
And you're back less than 4 months later wanting more?
Well, when I got the raise, when I told them I was going to leave, it wasn't a dollar amount. They told me, what do you think, what do you need to stay? And I didn't want to, since I was bluffing, I didn't want to say that, to give a number that I really wanted. That's why I just did the $3.
Does your boss like classic rock?
What's that? What do you mean?
Any chance he heard this?
Lisa?
What? Go ahead.
Did you know you're on a radio station?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any chance your boss is listening?
No, I don't think so. I hope not.
Yeah, I would hope you would.
All right. So, look, it sounds like you felt you were grossly underpaid. You got part of the way there, and now you're already wanting another raise. Even Joe, who's a liberal and wants to just hand out money to the poor, sounded like he was stinging right up when you started asking for a raise. So it might be difficult.
Well, it's not so much a raise for myself. It's more for the industry, for the CNAs that do similar work like me.
You're calling on behalf of all your people just
exactly.
For general advice? Okay, I can give that.
Yes, exactly, for CNAs right. In general to...
The standard general, ask your boss how you're doing to open the conversation, still applies.
Okay.
But if you're in a competitive, and your boss even gave this to you, if you're in a competitive situation where your boss is likely to say, what will it take to keep you? Don't bluff.
Okay.
Go out and do the work of landing another job offer. And be open. Okay. You just might enjoy where you're going. Don't bluff.
Okay.
And in your line of work, is there any way you could generate some what they call in our business non-traditional revenue? Can you, maybe befriend some of these older people and have them leave a little something for you as a tip when they pass?
Yes. Try to get in their will. That's another thing.
Just
don't bluff and play checkers with the old guy after hours and ask him about his finances.
You got to look for some,
every third pill for resale in the aftermarket.
And you could resell the prescriptions that they forget to take.
Yeah, lots of money there.
No, but I have another one for you, Lisa. Also,
okay.
Do you know what another word for bluff is?
Lie.
Lying. Yes.
Yeah.
That's lying, and the definition of a good lie to some people is one they don't think they could be caught at.
Right.
But I'm here to say karmatically. One way or the other, even though, of course, this is just a chat between you and me, and no one else is hearing this, and it'll never get back to them. One way or another, if you live your life that way, eventually people will figure out that you, you're willing to stretch the truth when it suits you.
Okay.
So you might want to do the legwork this
time.
She's
saying, okay, like, yes, I am, anytime.
You might want to go out and get a legitimate job offer and have somewhere to go.
Yeah, go for it. Go do it. All right. Thank you very much. We got Raymond.
And
the question, people who are a man, finally. People who are having difficulty asking for a raise will try to give you a little coaching. 1-800-252-1025. Raymond, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going, Bob?
Good.
I live in Silverdale, but I work in Bainbridge, and I'm almost positive my boss is listening right now, and I want him to know that I think I deserve a raise because I drive like 30 miles to work every day. Plus, I hurt myself almost every single day.
Oh.
Okay, now here's a trap you're falling into. It's called it's called the fairness trap.
Uh-huh.
It's difficult to start with, it's unfair what you're doing to me, because it immediately puts the boss on the defensive. Because previously he was paying you and getting something for it. Now he's paying you and you're saying he doesn't deserve something for it. Don't start there.
Yeah.
He's paying you to do a job where the place is. He doesn't dictate where you live. That's up to you that you live 30 miles
but
away.
But also, since he's a listener of ours, let's do a shout-out to your boss. What's his name?
Oh, his name is Mike.
Mike. Hey, Mike. How you going?
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
All right. And disregard the first half of that call.
Yeah.
And what is it that you do, Raymond?
I'm a Finnish carpenter.
That is a very, if you're good at it, a very artistic and very talented profession, and a good Finnish carpenter, boy, they're hard to come by.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if anybody needs a good one, I got one.
Are you good?
I'm all right.
How do you know you're good?
Well, nobody really complains. I think that if I wasn't good at it, I'd probably hear something about it.
Now, you said you hurt yourself almost every single day. Are you bad with the hammer, or, I mean, how are you hurting yourself?
I find myself getting cut on a bunch of things, like cardboard and razor knives, and pretty much whatever I come in contact with, it seems like karmatically I'm prone to cutting myself.
So the two reasons so far you said you want to raise is, one, I'm a high risk being employed by you, and two, I live a long ways away. Those aren't really good arguments to go in and ask for more money.
No, yeah, I understand. I just think that the demand for help that he needs and the amount of help I give him, I'm worth a little bit more than he's shelling out.
All right, Raymond, I'll sound like a broken record. Take him out to lunch.
Okay.
And sit down and say, look, I've been working at this for a while. How long have you been working for him?
A couple of years now.
Been with you a couple of years. I really care about my profession. The number one thing I care about is, how good of a job am I doing?
Yeah.
Am I doing a great job? Am I good at what I do? Are there things that I could improve at? So you start by doing a needs analysis of your employer. Ask him, you know, what could you work on? And if he says, God, you're awesome, you're fantastic, I could never bear to live without... Oops. So start there. Move closer to work.
Yeah.
It's a free country.
Yeah, and he'll show you how that will save you money and thus equal a raise.
I don't want to diss Silverdale, but I'll leave that to you. Move closer
to
work.
Yeah, it's a pretty awful place.
Are you just renting there?
Yeah.
You can move.
There's nothing wrong with Silverdale if you also work in Silverdale.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Okay. Thank you, Raymond. Last call. Yes, what's this?
This is an email I think you should read.
From a 10-year-old who wants a raise.
Because we might actually be able to pull off.
Hi, my name is Cole. I am 10 years old. I think I need a raise in my allowance. I do yard work. I empty the dishwasher. I take out the trash and I feed the pets on weekends, and I only get $10 a month. How do you think I could get a raise, Cole? This is difficult for me. You know why?
Why?
It's 2008.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had a 10-year-old in 15 years. And I don't know what a 10-year-old needs to get by. And I don't know what what is the norm for a 10-year-old? Do you have a 9-year-old?
I have a 9-year-old.
Okay.
My 9-year-old, providing that all the duties are accomplished, gets a dollar a day. So at the end of the week, we look and review.
A dollar a day?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
$7 a week. She only gets $28 in February. Does she understand why?
Well, no. We pay her $7 at the end of every... Friday is payday.
$7 a week.
If she did good, she gets the full $7. Now, if there was a day that maybe she argued with mom and didn't want to get out of bed or didn't do some of her basic duties, then she...
The money gets yanked.
She gets docked a dollar.
That's a steal. That's
so awesome. Let me ask you this, Joe. Would you be looking to take on somebody like Cole who does good work?
Oh, I'd pay
Cole
10.
Should get another offer from another set of parents.
I would pay 10 a week for one that actually does yard work.
Mom, I like it here. I've enjoyed our time together, but I got a better offer from the Bryants up the street there.
Is Cole on the phone? No. Cole, you are 10. Yard work, dishwasher, trash, pets on weekends, $10 a month. I'm going to tell you something, Cole. At age 10, you have no leverage. Do you know what leverage is? Rhymes with beverage. Totally different word. Leverage means if you don't get what you want.
You are terrible at this.
No, I'm telling the truth. Let me finish, okay? Guys, interrupt.
Rhymes with severage.
I don't even hear the whole idea. You have no leverage. You need to learn the word leverage. Now, younger kids have leverage because they can jump up and down and cry. But right?
Throw a fit. Rhymes with spit.
Throw a fit. When you're terrible in your twos, you have leverage because, you know, you can basically whine and get something. You're in a difficult age right now because you're 10. You're starting to have the thoughts that fully grown people have of wanting to negotiate and wanting to reason and get something. He took the time to write this email. But you don't yet have, you know, you don't really, it's not like you can run away to a different set of parents.
A better offer.
As Joe was mentioning, you can't do that. And don't bluff, by the way, like I told the earlier caller.
Yeah, I just got to take that Bryant offer up the street, Mom. I've enjoyed our time together, but.
So, what works for you is similar to what works for all those other people. Mom, Dad, I called you here today to ask, how good am I doing with the yard work and the dishwasher? Is the trash out neatly where it's supposed to be? Ask them how good you're doing, and when they say yes, stick it to them. When they say you're doing good, say, $10 a month is tough, Mom and Dad. What would I have to do for you to be happy about paying me more? I want you to write this down like you've just paid $500 to attend a seminar at a Hilton.
Now rub the shoulders of the person next to you. Yeah. Now turn to the left and rub the shoulders of that person.
I hope that's helpful. John in Renton. Hello, John.
Hey, Bob. We give our kids, based on how old they are. So I have a 10-year-old and a 9-year-old. My 10-year-old gets $10 a week. My 9-year-old gets $9 a week. And it's, you know, they have to do their chores. You know, we don't do anything major outlandish.
But he has no recourse to ask for a raise.
Exactly.
It's like Russia, each according to his age.
Yep, as they get older, they get more money.
And so he knows that's an iron fist policy, and there's nothing he can do to make himself worth more.
Well, I mean, they could certainly try. I mean, I'd love to see the creativity of negotiation, but they haven't gotten quite that creative yet.
Well, what if he came to you, like Bob suggested Cole do, and sat you down and said, Dad, how am I doing? Is the garbage getting out? Or is the dishwasher emptied on time? Is the yard free of dog poo? And what would I have to do to earn more, Dad?
I would be all over that. I would love it if my kids came to me with that. You know, that's what I do when it comes raise time for myself. I sit down, meet with the boss, and say, hey, here's what I do. Here's what you're asking for. Here's what I do over and above. Let's talk turkey.
Thank you. Dan and Kent, last word. Go ahead.
Hey, I got a boss that, like, everywhere I hear around the company, he seems like he's a real penny pincher and stuff, and I'm almost scared to go ask for a raise. And then I know, you know, I'm past due on my review. They said, okay, 90 days, you'll get a review. I've been here since November, and, you know, I've been pretty much steadily improving at the job. But, I mean...
But he's a tightwad, and he's got a rough exterior, and people are afraid of him.
In a way, I mean, he's actually a pretty cool guy, but, you know, the way he runs a business, he's trying to keep it real tight.
Yeah. Guys like that are cream puffs on the inside and feel bad about how rough they treat people. I recommend guilt, lots of guilt. But first you have to set it up. You can't just walk in with the guilt. You have to set it up with the how am I doing.
You seem to know a lot about these types of people.
Yes, I do.
Thanks, man.
Does that help, I hope?
I think it does. You know, yeah. I was thinking along those lines, and it's kind of funny. Today they got me doing the demeaning test. I think maybe I'll just pull the whole guilt trip on him.
But don't, you know, but, you know, you can't be obvious about it. Again, you'll make people defensive if you do that. Yeah, basically, get them to open up to you about how you're doing.
Okay.
All right. That was kind of the recurring theme for the whole thing.
I like that theme.
Rhymes with thing.
Do you haggle? Some people haggle a lot. They believe in haggling. And actually, different cultures haggle. You know, here in the U.S., we're, you know, every culture has its customs. We're accustomed to going to a store. They put a price on something. You go up and you pay for it. Recent news articles have informed some of you that in what's called a fragile economy, no price has to be final. And by the way, there are other things that even though we go into a store and we pay what the asking price is, there are other things where it's a badge of dishonor to pay the asking price. Homes, cars, There are times with homes and cars, for example, when the say if it's a brand new thing like a Prius when they first came out, you know, you couldn't haggle at all because they only had a few and you just wanted to get one. Right. Supply and demand will always take precedence. But who goes into a car dealer, says, "How much is that?"
Okay, it happens.
They love those people. They have a name for them, don't they?
Laydowns.
Laydowns.
Yep.
I was one of those.
Do they play a little lay down Sally music in the background?
We do that amongst the sales staff. There ain't nothing that is wrong. Wanting you to pay more to me. It's all supply and demand.
Yeah.
If a brand new model comes out, like the Prius was when Eric bought his, it's not a matter of bad, market or a bad sportsmanship or salesmanship.
No, but you would still try to haggle. You don't ever go to a car place and say, okay, thank you.
I worked for car dealerships that would take, offers, of course, and at one time I worked at a Honda store, and good luck. This guy said, "Well, will you take less than that?" I'm like, "No, bye." I got people waiting around, line up around the block to get this car.
But you're right. With cars, sometimes you'll find that's the basic price. But with homes also, sometimes you'll find out, "Oh, no, we gave you our best price." That's good. Generally, that's a good dealer, by the way. And generally, that's a pretty good price. If they priced it right, they're comfortable with their price. That's fine. Haggling is meant to be, you don't always, haggling doesn't mean you have to get something.
Oh.
But for the most part, in stores, we didn't. And now, it looks like we can more. Home Depot was mentioned in an article in the New York Times last week, and they were contacted and said, "Yep, we want to work with the customer. If that happens to mean negotiating a price, we're willing to look at that." Does that mean you should never go into Home Depot and buy a hammer without going, "Look at this hammer. I can get this hammer in China for pennies on the dollar." Give me a little bit off.
I was wondering that, too. I mean, if you're buying enough lumber to build your whole house, maybe there's some wiggle room. But if you're buying a three-pack of batteries, are they going to...
And does this make you feel, if you don't haggle, that because you don't have the chutzpah, you're now being taken advantage of even more? Because there's a price for hagglers, and there's a price for wimpy people. And you're going to pay the wimpy people price.
I'd like to know who has the authority to drop that price.
The manager.
Well, I mean, that's...
So, well, in some stores, actually, every salesperson, every employee has the price. And maybe we can get some salespeople who have the right to drop the price to call in and disguise their voice.
Oh, okay.
Because we might recognize it from our Saturday trip to Home Depot.
I've often wondered, too, the or best offer. When you see a car sign in a car window for sale, $3,000 or best offer.
OBO.
Why do you bother putting $3,000 up there? No, nope.
Because it's for comparison.
OBO up there. Is anybody going to say, "Oh, I'm going to give you $3,000"?
No, it's a point of comparison. It's like why they put manufacturer suggested retail price and our price right next to each other. It's to make you feel better about what you got. And it's always a phony number, by the way. Here's Bill in Seattle. Bill, hello.
Hello, Bob. Cock-a-doodle-doo.
Welcome.
And before I start, I just want to say, Casey, you are so hot.
Oh, thanks.
What would you pay for a girl like that?
indescribable.
$5,000 an hour. Come on, make her feel good. Come on, she's had a rough weekend.
OBO.
OBO. $5,000 OBO.
Sweet.
No, I haggle all the time. Can I mention stores?
Yes, please. I think it's okay. Sure, why not?
Circuit City, I've done it twice. You just go in there, they got some kid in there, and you're looking at a piece of stereo equipment or a TV or whatever it is, and you're looking at the price, and you got the 17-year-old kid there, and then you say, "Yeah, are there any discounts?" And he goes, "Geez, I don't know." I go, "Could you go get the manager?" Now, the manager comes over and you say, "Hey, man, can you do me a better price on this, this stereo?" And I've done it twice, and I've saved $200 on two different items. And it's real easy. You smile while you're doing it. You just have a good big grin on your face. You say, "Hey, man, can you do a little better bump the price? It's kind of expensive." For some people, that's embarrassing, but I was raised that way, and I save money all the time.
Out the yin-yang.
What was that?
Nothing. It's an expression.
But how
big a ticket item do you have to, I mean, you don't go into the grocery store and say, two cans of peas for a dollar. Surely you can give me three.
Let's see you go get the manager.
Here's how cheap I am. I'm a subcontractor, and I buy things at hardware stores and such in all kinds of towns all over the state. And the people that I work for reimburse me. So I go into a little country hardware store, and I'm picking up, you know, maybe $10 worth of hardware.
So you do this even in Mayberry?
Yeah, I do it in Mayberry because, you know, most places now have computers, and they can look right on their computer and know what they paid for it. And I'm telling you, a lot of times they'll do it, they'll cut you a better price if you ask. And there's something about the satisfaction of knowing that you save money. Most people just go, or at least around here, I think this is an East Coast thing, they haggle. Around here they just go, oh, okay, and they just plop down their money. Over a lifetime I've saved thousands of dollars. That feels good to me.
Sure, we can't build a new drunk tank for Otis anytime soon because he haggled out the bargains there. But it costs you nothing to ask for a discount.
Absolutely.
It costs you absolutely nothing. The worst that can happen is they say no, and you've lost nothing.
Yeah, and you don't have to make anybody mad or anything. I mean,
who cares if you do? That's the whole point of it. Who cares if you do? Yeah. You don't know these people.
Yeah. Okay.
You don't have to deal with them later. Thank you, sir. Cock-a-doodle-doo. That's the first time I've ever talked to him.
I know.
He said electronics.
I'm going to start doing it.
There's one place where...
when I suspect they're new. Sorry, go ahead,
Joe.
Sweet.
Electronics. They said that's one place where there is a lot of that going on right now.
Yeah, and the reason for this, by the way, the reason for the sea shift, the reason for the change is the internet, because people now can go on the online and hit pricegrabber.com. Mm-hmm. There's several of these different... isn't one of them like Squirrel Nuts... It's like a squirrel one.
My Simon.
Really?
My Simon. Price Simon. Grabber. Then there's one called like Next or something.
Next Tag or something.
Next
like
Tag.
That.
Yeah. And these are bot sites that search the whole internet, and they give you a comparison price for, you know, if you're looking for a plasma TV or something like that.
Let me, I haven't been through about 7 years of doing this for a living. Let me tell people how to do this. You don't just want to say, is that the best you can do on this? You know, is there any room to move on this? Because that lets him say no very easily. You go in and you say, how much additional discount are you offering on that? You make the assumption that there is room to
how
move
much
on
additional
it.
Discount
how
is
much
there?
Additional, what kind of additional discount are you guys offering right now on that item right there?
So Nap keeps it, he can't say no to that?
He says, well, it makes it harder for him to say okay, no to
how
that.
How does
it
help
make
to
it easy.
Pull out the green, to pull out and say, how much cash right now?
Unless you do
how much if you meet me at the back door and we don't even tell your boss?
The under the table price.
Yeah, Joe, there are always ways to increase the discount. I wouldn't recommend them. Brian, we're going to keep you anonymous, Brian, or not? We have to keep you anonymous?
No.
No, okay. You work for?
Home Depot.
I was going to say, rhymes with Rome Schmeepo.
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead.
We just had a all-star meeting last night, and they laid down the rules for us, and every associate in every Home Depot can negotiate within a certain percentage.
That's what I was going to ask. What percentage are you guys willing to move?
You know, on most stuff, it's 10%, and then if it's competitor stuff, they'll match that and then do 10% more.
Wow. So they're committed to... Okay, now, does this make anyone who pays for the stuff without asking a wuss?
No.
No, okay.
No, you're my new best friend!
And I hope that was convincing for them.
Pepsi-Cola is up to date. The modern folks who watch their weight. We made it light just right for you. Refreshes without filling too. Have a Pepsi. Have a Pepsi party.
Was that Pepsi Light? Was that what they first called Diet Pepsi? Yeah. Have a Pepsi. Have a party. What year was that commercial? 53?
Wow.
Before I was born. Pepsi-Cola just announced cucumber soda.
Excuse me?
Yeah, cucumber soda. Can you imagine that lady singing about cucumber soda?
not keep my broadcast license.
That's their new thing, huh?
In Japan, not in America.
A cucumber-flavored soda will debut in stores all across Japan today. It's called Pepsi Ice Cucumber. Goes on sale in a limited edition flavor. You'll only be able to buy it in Japan and only this summer. Aya Takamoto is the spokesperson for Pepsi's Japanese distributor, and she says, "We want a flavor that makes people think of keeping cool in the summer heat. We thought cucumber was just perfect."
That's a bigger dietary supplement or player in the Asian palate than it is here, I think.
I don't know. I don't like the idea of cucumber soda. Remember Jones, which is having some trouble, came out with all sorts of hot dog sodas and turkey soda.
Yeah, mashed potato and gravy is cooler.
Eric?
Well, it makes sense because in Asia they don't have the sweet tooth like we do. So you might find things like corn-flavored ice cream. I saw that in Thailand, for example.
Oh, my God.
Really?
It was actually pretty good.
Are they crazy?
I could eat corn-flavored ice cream, but I'm...
Could
I'm,
you now?
Yeah. You think you could?
Oh, yeah.
Joe, you could eat shrimp-flavored ice cream.
Well, more giblet sherbet, Joe.
I couldn't drink cucumber soda. I mean, I like all foods except about two, and cucumber's one of them.
That's really?
Just one of your hated foods.
Yeah, that's a flavor I just don't appreciate.
I love cucumbers, but I don't know if I could...
Do you generally hate vegetables?
The only two things I can think of I really hate are both vegetables, yes. Cucumbers and tomatoes. I like...
And ABBA. You hate ABBA?
Oh, yeah, that too.
Well, we're talking food.
They have a lot of cucumber drinks now at bars. A lot of their tropical drinks, and I tried one the other day, and it was disgusting.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
You hate tomatoes?
I love everything that comes from the tomato except the tomato itself. Can't do raw tomatoes. Love ketchup. Love spaghetti. Love pizza. Love when you mush up a tomato and cook it.
Add sugar to it.
Yeah.
Then it's good.
Love chili. But just a raw tomato, I can't eat. I have to.
Have you ever had a vine ripened right from the sunshine tomato with real tomato flavor?
About once every 10 years when my wife makes me taste it because she thinks my taste buds might have changed. She goes, "Oh, how can you not like this?" So because I don't like tomatoes. "Oh, when's the last time you tried one?" "Well, like 10 years ago when you made me." "Well, try one again because I bet your taste buds have changed." No,
my wife does this too with fish, yeah. And you still hate them.
Yeah, I hate tomatoes. Not big on fish either, but I'll eat it. Mm.
My grandfather used to grow tomatoes in the backyard. Big beefsteak tomatoes, and we would slice them down.
Yeah, sliced?
Yep.
Really? See, the problem I have with tomatoes is that in order to mass produce food, they don't really ripen it. I mean, they even have ones that say vine ripened.
Mm-hmm.
That's about as real as Pamela Anderson's you know what. They're not real.
Ain't much
Vine ripened means all the way to the point of ripeness while still outside in the sun on the vine.
Yep.
In the grocery store, what it means, I think, is instead of cutting a tomato off, we cut a piece of the vine off and put it in the package.
Put it on there with you.
Because they can't ship it. If it's already ripe, when it's vine ripe, it goes bad in a couple of days.
I'm glad I don't like the tomato when I see the cost, because I do a lot of the shopping and I'll buy them for my wife. Man, we're talking $4 or $5 a pound sometimes for those vine ripened tomatoes.
They're free from your garden, buddy, and they grow like weeds. They constantly produce the fruit. My grandfather used to pluck them every morning, set them in the window in the kitchen there, let the sun get the last few hours.
Do you garden?
Kelly was talking about starting a garden this year. She wants to, plow some land and do it, from the land. And I said, no. If you're going to do it, go buy a box or something. And let's start above land before we start, tilling the soil and see if you got
You want to do a little hydroponic garden like Will Robinson and Penny in Lost in Space.
Yeah, just
a little card table out there.
I don't know what the soil on this planet will do.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can grow a lot from one of those barrels. I don't think it's time to start chewing up the lawn yet and planting carrots. That's what she wants to do.
It was one of the greatest things about that show, by the way. It was so unbelievable. They had what amounted to a folding card table
outside the Jupiter spaceship.
And they would put... little plants on there, and it was supposedly feeding a whole family.
Mm-hmm. In the 8 hours they were on that planet, they could grow an entire crop.
What I want to start is an herb garden, because just strictly for economic reasons. You go and you buy, like, that sage or, you know, basil or something, and you buy one of them packs, and it's so expensive. And then, you know, the wife will use, like, a couple little snips, and then the rest just sits in the fridge and dries up, and you throw it away. You do that over and over again. It's like, we need that stuff living so you just can grab it and when you need it a little bit.
Little herbs in the back. Yeah. Yeah. You like that? Don, do you cook with herbs and sprinkle stuff? Like,
oh, yeah.
When, like a gourmet chef?
When,
like,
I'm doing things the way I should be doing, yeah. I mean, when I'm not, you know, ripping open the carton and throwing it in the microwave.